Okay, today is the 24th of Marcheshvan, November 13th, continuing in Sefer Yonah, really revisiting the third perek. Just to review a little bit, last time we spent a good deal of time talking some more about Yonah's tefillah. According to some, Yonah's tefillah is something that's not in the text, and what we have in the text is his thanks for Hashem being ready to answer his tefillah. According to others, it is what we see. We saw numerous explanations of the phrases. According to the Malbim, that sort of two phases of the tefillah refer to when he's in the first fish and when he's in the second fish, respectively, twice when he thought he was hopeless and helpless, and Hashem saved him. Interesting discussion about Mishamrim Havle Shav, where he contrasts the people who pursue vanity, and the Abarbanel had an interesting shot in that it's referring to the people of Nineveh, and that Yonah's actually comforting himself that he doesn't think they're going to do a complete tshuva, which is something to bear in mind, because one of the issues we're going to have to deal with is why is he going to be surprised? Soon Yonah's going to be upset and crestfallen and apparently surprised by the result of his going to Nineveh, and the question is what didn't play out the way he thought it would? So we'll have to address that soon. But let's begin again from Perek Gimel. We covered some of this last week, but there are more things to talk about. So once again, from the third chapter, Vayihi Dvar Adonai El Yonah Sheinis Lemar. And the word of Hashem was to Yonah a second time saying. So once again, there is a teaching of our Chachamim. When we refer to Chazal, we usually refer to the rabbis of the Gemara. And make yourself at home. Thank you. Nice and warm here. Of the Gemara and the Medrash. So on this pasuk, at the beginning of the third parak of Yonah, where it says the word of Hashem came to Yonah a second time, saying. So there's a Chazal. Hashem spoke to him a second time, but not a third time. It's a Gemara and Yevamos and Daf Tzariches, and it's really a machilta. It's a medrash, and what's interesting is the Gemara doesn't have exactly everything that's in the Mechilta, but in the Gemara, it appears as follows. There's a braisa that someone tells a story that he went to visit one of the islands out at sea, and he found a convert who had married Matsasi Gerecha Chenasa Eishes Ochiv Me'imo. I found a convert who had married his maternal brother's wife. The brother is no longer married to that wife, but he married her, which usually would be forbidden. Or for a Jew would be forbidden. Amati lo b'ni mi hirshacha. I said to him, who allowed you to do that? And he responds, al safsal ze yoshev Rabbi Akiva v'amar shnei dvarim. Rabbi Akiva was sitting on this bench. The great Rabbi Akiva was sitting on this bench, and he said two things. Ger no se eishes ochiv mi'imo, that a convert can marry eishes ochiv mi'imo. But you know, we know a ger shenes gar katan shenola dami. When somebody converts, it's like they've been reborn. They're not really related to their biological relatives in halacha. And shenes, the second thing, I'm sorry, ve'omar, and he said, vayihi dvar Hashem al Yonah shenes lemar, shenes dibra imo shechina, shlishes lo dibra imo shechina. The second thing that Rabbi Akiva said when he was sitting on this bench was this pasuk, the beginning of the third chapter of Yonah, where it says Hashem spoke to Yonah a second time. It means a second and not a third. That's and the Gemara continues for a little bit, because the real context, it's this first teaching that's most relevant in the Gemara, but it's the second teaching that's most relevant to us. But later on down the page, the Gemara asks the question, V'hoksiv, and we've spoken about this, but there's a pasuk in Malachim Beis when it's talking about Yeravam ben Yoash, who was the king of the Malchus Yisrael at the time. So the pasuk says in the 14th chapter of Malachim Beis, it's pasuk Chav Hei, Hu Heishiv es Gvul Yisrael Milochem Asal Yam Aravot Kidvar Hashem Asher Dibar Biyad Abdu Yonah Ben Amitai Hanavi. This king was able to re-expand the borders of the Jewish people, which is a good thing, as per the word of Hashem to Yonah ben Amittai, the Navi. So Hashem spoke to Yonah at the beginning of Sefer Yonah. He speaks to Yonah here, and we have a record. We don't have the actual nevuah, but we have the pasuk in Malachim Beis saying that what happened here, this victory, this success of the Jewish people, had been told by Hashem to Yonah ben Amittai. So it seems like there's a third communication of Hashem to Yonah. So again, there's two answers in the Gemara. Amar Ravina al iske Ninve ka'amar. Ravina said, it just means with regard to Ninveh, he only spoke to him about it twice. This story, he spoke to him twice. Gave two messages. Originally said go and call out there, and then he says it again here. But in other contexts, that we're not commenting on that. Shane is with regard to Ninveh twice and not a third time. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar, and this is an interesting opinion, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak says, Halchikamar, this is what it means to say in that pasuk in Malachim Beis, Gedvar Hashem Shadivar Yad Avdo Hanavi Kishem Shenepach Ninve Leninve Me Ra Alatova Kach Bimei Ravam Ben Yoash Nepach Lam Yisrael Me Ra Alatova. It's all the same thing. Just as in the time of Ninve they turn from bad to good, so too the Jewish people at that time, at the time of the king Ravam Ben Yoash, who overall was not a good king, he was a pretty bad king. But if you look at the psukim there in the 14th chapter of Malachim Beis, it says Hashem did a salvation for them through this king, as he had spoken to Yonah, so that they turned from bad to good. So somehow Yonah had a very general nevuah about turning from bad to good, that we can say that both things are subsumed under one heading. Hashem only spoke to him twice. All right, it seems like a third time. The Torah says those two things are one. It's the same thing. It's about turning from bad to good. Now, there's a lot to comment on this Gemara, part of which would be the Jewish people did not do a mass tshuva at that time. Hashem spared them. Maybe they had some merits, some zechuyos, but it wasn't a complete and total turnaround, which might indicate that the people of Nineveh also their tshuva was not a complete tshuva. And that's something I want to get to in today's shir, which is to what degree did they do tshuva? It's going to end up being a machlokas. I don't want to disappoint anybody, like many things in the Torah, that there's actually a machlokas. Maybe it's just ways of saying it's all one, it's two different aspects. But to what degree did the people of Nineveh do tshuva? And that is a discussion. Mefarshim say that the commonality, we have this interesting chazal. Rabbi Akiva was sitting on this bench, and he stated a halacha which basically implied that a convert is a new person. And he said a halacha, or he said a concept that Hashem only spoke to Yonah twice and not a third time. What's the commonality? The Aruch HaNer, one of the great achronim, says something along the lines of, it's like you're someone new. Tshuva is like being a new person, and maybe even if it's not such a visible tshuva, it's not so apparent. You look at a convert, you can't see he's a new person, but he's a new person. So maybe it means that tshuva also makes you a new person, and whatever gzeira was on the previous person is not on the new person. So there may be some common thread running through the two things that Rabbi Akiva was talking about. The Mefarshim say things along those lines.
But that was the idea behind teshuva, is that you're remaking yourself. Like when Sarah laughed and then said, I didn't laugh, because she thought herself to be, you know, a new person having gone through teshuva.
Right. Right. And it could be that we're seeing, and even if it's not a tshuva shlema, even if it's not a complete tshuva, but a person works on himself or herself, it's a different person. And that's maybe the comparison to a Gershon as Geyer. A person converts, they're a new person. A person does tshuva, they're a new person. And especially because we'll see there's a significant opinion that the people of Nineveh did not do such a thorough and full tshuva.
Which but they saved themselves. But
they didn't have to save themselves. Maybe only to delay their ruin, as we'll see shortly. But it certainly had a positive effect, yeah.
So what is tshuva for a convert? What does that mean? Like
the convert's not doing tshuva. The convert is just coming tachas kanfei hashchina, going from a realm of seven mitzvahs to a realm of 613. That's like becoming a new person, even without tshuva per se.
So can I ask you a question? This is, I hope it's not a little bit off the topic, but you know, we have all these guests at our house, and one time I son brought somebody home, And he, you know, he was in shul davening, whatever. He took him home. We invited him for Shabbos. And later we found out that he was not. He never told us that like he was not Jewish yet. And you know, somebody just looked on his, I don't have Instagram, but you know, Facebook, and it was just like he felt like very betrayed. Do you know what I mean?
I thought it was an issue.
What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, Yom Tov is a halachic issue. There's nothing actually wrong. You're not allowed to invite a non-Jew on Shabbos, not on Yom Tov. But yeah, I mean, people should be straightforward about things. But what can I say?
Can I ask a follow-up question about the ger being a new person and being able to, like, to what end are they allowed to marry? They could marry, like...
Yeah, so there's some things that mean they're rabbanon and not permissible. I don't want to get into a whole Ebenezer shir, but in concept, they're not related. It's really like being reborn, and that seems to be the comparison. And whenever the Gemara has where two things seem unrelated but they're set together, we always look for some commonality. Yeah, by the way, if you take a peek ahead toward the end of the Sefer, which we'll get to, it's Hashem, but when Yonah has this kikayon, it's protecting him, and then Hashem strikes it. He strikes it down, and then Yonah is very upset. The Sfarno there says that he understood it symbolically, that Hashem was conveying some deeper message. Says the Sfarno, Shechoshev Shehaya Zela Oz Shechuas Yisrael Al Yidei Yeravim Ben Yoash Ti Yizman Muat Ki'inyan HaKikayon. The other communication, significant Nevuah, any Nevuah is significant. The other Nevuah that Yonah received from Hashem was about salvation happening at the time of the king of Yeravim ben Yoash. And the Svarna says the symbolism, the way Yonah understood what Hashem was saying was, here Yonah's in the heat and he's passing out, and Hashem provides him with this plant for shade, and then he strikes it down. So it's like there was a salvation and it's short-lived. So Yonah understood that to be a remez, a hint, that the Nevuah about salvation in the hands of that king would also be short-lived, which brings in the discussion in this Gemara. Anyway, but getting back to our story, so in the Gemara, they cite the drasha, Shenis Lema, Shenis Velo Shlishis. The Shechinah spoke to him twice, not a third time. In the Mechilta, which is a bit of a fuller version of this Chazal, it presents it as a criticism, like a punishment, because Yonah was tava kvod haben below tava kvod ha'av. That's a famous phrase on your Yonah test at the end of this series. That phrase will definitely be on there. Fill in the blanks. Yonah tava. So Yonah demanded, so to speak, or wanted kvod haben, the honor of the son, below tava kvod ha'av, and didn't demand the honor of the father, meaning he's worried about the Jewish people, but he's not worried k'vayachal about Hashem. Because of that, Hashem wouldn't speak to him another time. That's the way it's presented in the Mechilta. In the Gemara, it's not so clear that it's even meant as a punishment or something negative. It could just be that everything was covered, everything that had to be spoken about. But in the Medrash, it's presented as a criticism or a punishment to Yonah. So what did he say to him? Let's look at Pasuk Beis. Kum, get up, lech el Ninveh ha'ir ha'gedola. Go to Nineveh, the great city, Ukra Eleha, and call to it Esakriya Sharanochi Dover Elecha, the calling that I am speaking to you, that I speak to you. So first of all, Eleha. It confuses all the kids who do Anam Zemiros. Pe'ero Alai Ufa'eri Alav, Bekarov Eli, Bekari Elov. You have Alai, Alav, Eli, Elov. In Hebrew, Alai means upon me. Eli means to me, right? With an Aleph at the beginning, and a Tzeira means to. And Alai is from the word Al, means on. So it's interesting. At the beginning of the Sefer, in Perak Aleph, when the story was starting, it says, Hashem said to him, second pasuk in the Sefer, Kum lech el Ninveh ir gdola ukra aleha, and call upon it. Here, it's ukra Eilaha. I don't even remember who right now, but one of the Mefarshim says that Kra Aleha means to make a declaration of fate. You're not even addressing the city. You're talking about the city. It's doomed. Kra Aleha means call to it. It means there's a charge. You're summoning it. So the way some of Farshim take it, in fact, I think the Mabit does. I'll see it in a second. The original Nevuah was supposed to be, you're doomed. You're sinners. You're going to be destroyed. I'm coming here to tell you you're done with. And the second time, it's call to it, you better shape up, or there's going to be trouble, and you have a little bit more time. That is the way some of the Farshim take it. In fact, according to, I believe, the Mabit and Beis Elokim, that's a little bit what coaxed Yonah to go. It might sound counterintuitive, but he thought, if I go to them and I say you're going to be destroyed right now, they're going to instantly do tshuva. But if you call to them and say, you know, Hashem would like you to do tshuva, otherwise 40 days from now, it's not going to be good, that when they think they have a little bit of time, they won't respond with as much urgency. One of the classic svarim that we have covers fundamental beliefs, also tshuva and tefillah, is the what's safer known as Beis Elokim, House of God, by a man commonly known as the Mabit, Rav Moshe ben Yeshaya of Trani, Mem Beis Yud Tes, the Mabit, Moshe ben Yeshaya of Trani, and he's a contemporary of the Shulchan Aruch, and it's a very fundamental sefer in certain aspects of Hashkof and Jewish belief. So in the 13th, there's three sections, as I said before. One's on tshuva, it's the second section. First tefillah, then tshuva. So in the 13th chapter of the Shaar HaTshuva, he says something which is very interesting. I'm not sure if this is a unanimous hashkafa, but he talks about tshuva being largely unique to Klal Yisrael. I'll read some of it. I really want to get to what he says at the end, but this is valuable to know. Gam ki ha-tshuva mo'ila l'chol bo'i olam. Even though tshuva works for all inhabitants of the world, all people, im kol zeh yesh hefresh bein tshuvas Yisrael l'tshuvas shar ha-umos. Nevertheless, there's a difference between the tshuva of Am Yisrael and that of other nations. Interesting, it says shahayu b'shanim kadmonios, that were in the earlier generations. That's usually a sign that the writer is writing it for the censors. When they say something that they think is going to be offensive, you'll find in a lot of svarim, it says, this thing which applied many years ago, as if it doesn't apply today, but I don't think he means those words seriously, if I'm understanding him right. Ki ha'olam lo nivra ela b'shvil Yisrael, the world was created for Klal Yisrael, she yakablus ha'Torah, that they should accept the Torah, v'im lo yakablu en kiyim la'olam, if they won't, the world wouldn't exist, right? We know that. We have a teaching that when you say the Halal Hagadol, Hodol Hashem Kitov Kilolam Chasto, right? There's 26 Kilolam Chastos, and Chazal say that parallels the 26 generations from creation until the Torah was given, where the world was sustained like for free. Really, man has to maintain the world. Hashem gave the Torah, and he says, "Okay, keep my Torah, there'll be a world." So what about all the generations? Until then, that's Kili Olam Chasta. That was through kindness, those 26 generations. But you see from that really the world runs on Duncan. The world runs on Torah. V'chein ha-tshuva el-malei lo niskab lo ha-yakim lo. So we need Torah, and we also need tshuva, because without Torah, the world doesn't have a reason to exist, doesn't have a legitimacy. And without tshuva, it won't work. As I'll say in a moment. And he says, "V'zeh shekadma b'machshava l'briyas ha'olam b'chalal shiva dvarim shekadmu l'olam." That's why tshuva was created before the world, because it's so necessary. And he says, "V'Yisrael sheyesh aleim ol ramach mitzvos aseh u'shesa mitzvos lo aseh." The Jewish people who have 248 positive commandments and 365 negative. V'i efshe lamod b'chalal mebli shelo yikaimu ezu mitzvah yavrul ezaver. And it's impossible to exist without the inevitable reality that you'll fail to perform a mitzvah or even violate a negative mitzvah. Heim hatzrichim l'tshuva b'chol yom. So the Jewish people need tshuva every day. And as we have a harder course load, we have a harder task, and therefore chait is more prevalent or more inevitable. Ubishvilam nivreis, and it was created for them. It's a very fascinating thing. It sounds like he's saying, because the Jewish people have more mitzvahs and averos commanded upon us, therefore we need tshuva. And that's and since the Jewish people had to accept the Torah of the world to exist, that's why tshuva had to exist. Ubishvilam nivreis, tshuva was created for them. Ukemosha yiches hanavi alav hashal hatshuva liYisrael. He says, as you find that the Navi in his words attributes tshuva to the Jewish people. Tshuva Yisrael ad Hashem Elokecha. Return Yisrael. And he quotes other psukim and statements that really largely connect tshuva to Klal Yisrael.
What about non-Jews? Like, if they assume they can't?
So he's saying they can do tshuva, but that's not who tshuva was created for. He started off by saying even though tshuva works for any inhabitant of the world, but the real need for it is for the Jewish people. That's what he seems to be saying.
To whom are they doing teshuva, the non-Jews?
Well, let's just say a non-Jew hurt you, did something very hurtful, and then they apologize and they don't do it again. That's teshuva.
Well, first of all, every sin to another person is also a sin to Hashem. So anytime we do an aveiro, we have to fix it bein adam l'chaveiro and fix it bein adam l'makom, and we have this great gift that Hashem allows us regretting and doing better in the future as if we undo the past. That's what the great gift of tshuva. And it does work for all people, but it was put there. And there's some things in the world that everyone benefits from, but it was really, it was made for someone. So that's what he seems to be saying. I'm not going to go through everything he has here. But then toward the end of this chapter, he writes, you can imagine he's bothered by the same classic question that all of the Mefarshim in the beginning of the book of Yonah were bothered by, which is, what's with the story of Yonah? He's going to Nineveh, which is a non-Jewish city, to tell him to do tshuva. How do you understand it? It stands out, as I said in the first year, it stands out from the entire Tanakh. You don't have a Navi being sent. So the way he says it is, Vafila Yonah Navi Shaisa Iker Nevuasa L'Nineveh, even Yonah, whose main Nevuah was for Nineveh, Lo Amar Lahem Vafarashi Yashuvu B'Tshuva. He never said explicitly to them, do tshuva. He predicted, he told them about the bear that was coming their way. As it said at the beginning of the Sefer, go to Nineveh, call out upon them, declare upon them, because their bear has come up before me. And he said it to him a second time. That's what we're learning now. Right, it's the paragimel. And then he goes and he says, in 40 days, Nineveh will be overturned. And he says, we know that Yonah tried to get out of it because he didn't want the Jews to get in trouble. The Gentiles would do tshuva, not the Jews. V'lochein, says the Mabit. That's Moshe ben Yishai of Trani, the Beis Elokim. Kisha'amar la ukra alea ki also ra'asam lefonai barach. The first time when Hashem said, go kra alea, go call upon it because their bed has come up before me, he ran away. He saw, even though their sins are very bad, that when Hashem uses the metaphor, their evil came up before me, it means that it's a real heavy load of sins. It's because Hashem doesn't even have to look. It's like sometimes you cause such damage that a person doesn't have to go look at what you do. I can smell it. Something's burning. Created such an effect that it's going up to Hashem. The affliction of those who were being afflicted came up before Hashem. Yonah knew that Hashem, with his mercy, will forgive. If they feel that their fate is very close, if they feel they're in big trouble, oh boy, Yonah's going to come and tell them you're about to be destroyed, they'll do tshuva right away. So therefore, when Hashem sent them the second time, Amar la ukra eileh esakriya she anochi dover elecha. Call out what I'm going to say to you. Lo ratzel legalos lo miyad ofen akriya. They didn't want to tell him right away what to say. V'gam shina b'gam kein shelo yikra ki also ra'asam. When he does get there, what's he going to tell him? Hashem told me 40 days. Don't make it so urgent. So Hashem sent him with a less urgent message. Ki ulai lo yeshuvu kol kach mehera b'yoslehem shohus arbaim yom. Because that way maybe they won't do tshuva. V'yisratza yona lukro zos hakriya. And that way Yona would be willing. The problem is v'im kol zeh shavu b'tshuva shlema, and nevertheless they did do tshuva. See, this is interesting because according to the way he's explaining it, and there are others who say a similar thing, even though we had this whole episode where Yona is taught a lesson. You're running away from Hashem, you think you can get out of the shlichus, I'll throw you into a fish, into another fish, I'll throw you onto the dry land, etc. You think it's Hashem forcing Yona, you're going to do exactly what I said. But it sounds like HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself also, you know, had to negotiate, had to make a compromise. All right, Yona, you're standing up for Klal Yisrael, you're not going to do this if it's going to be trouble for Klal Yisrael. All right, so we won't give them such an urgent message. How about that? He's like, he's making a deal. You know, okay, Yona, so I won't give them such an urgent SMS. We'll give them a little bit of time. They won't take it as seriously. So it's fascinating. I'm a bit dissenting. Yona still had to be enticed, which is interesting. HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepts the taina, the claim of Yona. It's not fair. You're going to make the Jewish people look bad. So he says, okay, so I'll do it differently. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kiva Yochel gives in also. Kiva Yochel, it's as if Yona changed and Hashem changed. Of course, I don't mean that literally, but it's like Hashem changed his directive to him because he wasn't going to listen otherwise. In Pasuk Dalet, he's going to say, in 40 days Nineveh will be overturned. Had Hashem told him that at the beginning or not? So, people who study Parshas Lech Lecha will know that Rashi there, quoting Chazal, says no. Just like when Hashem told Avraham Avinu, let's go to the land that I'll show you. He didn't tell him where he's going even, so he gets more reward. If I tell you, I'd like you to go to the store and get this and come back, you know what you're doing from the outset, you obey, fine. But if I tell you, start driving, and I'll tell you where to go. Okay, turn left. Okay, and you don't even know, am I going 100 miles, 5 feet, I don't know. There's greater schar when it's not told right away, and also each new signal is a mitzvah. In Parshas Lech Lecha, Rashi says, "Kidei losis lo sochar al kol dibur v'dibur," to give him reward for each new command. Go here, go there, turn left, turn right. And there Rashi says the same thing with Yonah. He didn't tell him at the beginning where he's going. That's a medrash. The Metzudas David here, B'derech Pshat, on Pasuk Beis, Asher Anochi Dover Elecha, V'hu Ma Shekara V'amar Od Arbaim Yom V'nivin Nepechas V'lo Hutzol Chafarish Ki Me'elav Yuvan. In the Pasuk, it didn't spell it out, but the Metzudas David says that's what he told him. You know, at a simple pshat level, go there and call to them what I'm telling you, and he told it to him. There's a medrash that he didn't tell him right away, but you see that's two different pshatim. In fact, the Radak is a third. He says, "Asher anochi dover shedibarti elecha kvar." Call out to them what I already told you. V'gam ata ani dover elecha shetikra elecha shetiyu nepechas. And I'm telling you a new thing now. It's interesting. The Radak and the Sforno are opposites here. Asher anochi dover elecha means what I'm telling you, what I speak to you. The Sforno says, "Lo bilvar ki also ra'asam lefanai, avagam mashani dover ata." Not only should you tell them what I told you in Perek Aleph, also ra'asam lefanai, but also what I'm telling you now. According to the Radak, Asher anochi dover elecha, what I speak to you means what I told you already. So, call out to them what I tell you. Could either mean what I've told you, that's one way of taking it, or it could mean the new thing that I tell you. We have two mefarshim here taking it in opposite ways. So now what happens? Pasagimel v'yakom Yonah v'yelachal Nineveh k'dvar Hashem. Yonah got up and he went to Nineveh like the word of Hashem. V'Nineveh ha'isit yirgdol le'elokim malach shloshes yomim. And Nineveh was a great city to Hashem, a walk of 3 days. Simple pshat, that means in diameter, and he's going to go in 1 day's worth and then call out. I mentioned last time that the Ibn Ezra says it means walking around it is 3 days, which means it takes 1 day to go across it using pi. Vayochel Yonah lavo v'ir malach yom echad vayikro vayomar od arba im yom v'ninve nepachas. Okay, so Yonah began to come into the city, a travel of one day, and he called out and he said, another 40 days, and Nineveh will be overturned. Pasuk Hey, Vayaminu Anshe Nineveh Be'elokim, the people of Nineveh trusted in Hashem, Vayikru'u Tzom, they called a fast, Vayilbishu Sakam, they put on sackcloth, Migdolam V'ad Katanam, from their big ones, to from the eldest to the youngest. And then we're going to see the king is going to do that, and he's going to give orders, and they're going to do tshuva, and Hashem is going to see their actions and forgive them. Let's talk for a moment about the nature of the tshuva of the people of Nineveh and their ultimate fate. I am holding here Treyasar, 12 very fine books. Yonah is one of them. There's another one called Sefer Nachum. Yonah, Micha, and then Nachum. Okay, so two books later, many people have not studied the book of Nachum, but it begins with the words Maso Nineveh, prophecy about Nineveh. Sefer Chazon Nachum Ha'el Koshi, the vision of Nachum Ha'el Koshi. And then you have a few chapters describing, not in like physical detail, but more like poetic, about a destruction of the city of Nineveh. That's interesting. So, when did that happen? So, if you look in the Targum, in Navi, we have, in the Chumash, we have Targum Onkelos, which is like a literal translation, and then we have others, Yonatan Bazil. Here, the Targum on Navi is more midrashic, and it says here in the Targum, Milakadmin is Nabe Alo Yona Bar Amitai Neviya, the Migas Chefer. Earlier, he had prophesied about Nineveh, Yonah the son of Amitai from Gas Chefer, that's what it says in Melachim Beis, that's where he was from. Visavas Mechovoho. So, Visavas with Tufs. Vav, Tuf, Veis, Tuf, Vitavas. So, here's a rule. A Tuf in Aramaic is a Shin in Hebrew. Misifta is a Yeshiva. Yosav is Yoshav. I think of examples that you know. A Mishnah is a Masnitin with a Tuf, Matnitin. Shins in Hebrew become Tufs in Aramaic. So Vesavas means they did Tshuva. Veshav, Sav, Tuf, Vez is Shav, Shin Vez. Mechova, Chov is guilt. They did Tshuva from their guilt. Uchedo, and now the Osifas Lemechte, that they continued to sin, this is some time later. Tav is Nabel on Nachum Ibez Koshi, Kemodach Sibesifra Hadain. So now, Nachum prophesies upon them what it says in this Sefer. So it sounds like they did tshuva in the time of Yonah, but now they sinned again, and you have this vision of destruction of Nineveh that's described here. So the question is when? And the chronology is hard to figure out. So I'm going to make the problem and leave it for you to solve. But we have a Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar. I've cited the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar a number of times. There's some very important things that are relating to the book of Yonah. So there's a section of the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar, which is Medrash attributed to Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus. It starts like this: Hatshuva u'maisim tovim kitzris b'fnei ha'paranos. Tshuva and good deeds are like a shield that protect you from harm. And there are some other statements about tshuva there. Without tshuva, the world wouldn't exist. And then you have a whole series of statements. Teidelcha koach tshuva bore mei so-and-so. You should know the power of tshuva. Come take a lesson from, and then it goes through different figures in Tanakh. Achav, King of Israel, was a terrible person, but he did tshuva. Then Rabbi Avo says, Teidelcha koach tshuva bore mei David melech Israel. Take a look at David HaMelech, who does tshuva. Rabbi Yeshua, Amar Teidelcha koach tshuva bore mei Menashe. Look at the evil king Menashe, and he did tshuva. Then they actually have from Reb Shimon ben Lakish himself, not from a figure in Tanakh, but Reb Shimon ben Lakish, who was an Amora, a friend of Rabbi Yochanan and brother-in-law of Rabbi Yochanan, how he did tshuva. Then, strikingly, Reb Nechudi ben Akana Amar Teidelch Koach Tshuva Bo Remi Paro Melech Mitzrayim. Come take a lesson in tshuva from Paro. You're not going to believe this, that he rebelled against the Creator. He said, as we know from Chumash, who is Hashem that I should listen to his voice? But eventually when he saw the salvation of the Jewish people, he said, Micha mocha ba'elam Hashem. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved him. All the Egyptians were wiped out and he was saved. And guess what? He didn't die. V'halach u'malach b'Nineveh. And he went ahead and became the king in Nineveh. It's an amazing thing. And then it talks about how the people of Nineveh sinned. It talks about how they stole, they were involved in monetary crimes. I actually mentioned some homosexuality here. Ukeshesholach Kodesh Baruch Hu liyona linaveh alelach riva shoma paro. It's interesting, it's paro. When the king, he just referred to as the king here, but the Medrash says the Paro. When Paro heard that Yonah comes and says, talks about tshuva, he got up from his chair. We're going to read that pasuk soon, and he donned sackcloth, and he announced that everybody has to do tshuva. And we'll read it. We'll read those psukim, and this is like a further elaboration of what it says in those psukim. And then it says, "Arbo'im shona herich apo imohim." So here's the crux. 40 years, HaKadosh Baruch Hu delayed his anger against them. K'neged arboim yom sheshalachas Yonah. Paralleling the 40 days that Hashem sent Yonah. It sounds like from the Medrash, those 40 days, it sounds like maybe Yonah stayed around, but those 40 days from when Yonah sent them, they were doing tshuva the whole time. Ula'acha, which makes sense. I wouldn't be surprised if they stopped doing tshuva. When the 40th day came, which is supposed to be the deadline, and oh look, we weren't destroyed, yay! Probably went, you know, that's
party.
Yeah, and then they probably weren't as penitent after that. So for the 40 days of tshuva, he delayed his anger 40 years. Right, we have a concept of Yom Lashana, 40 days, 40 years by the spies. There's such a thing. Ula achar arboim shana shavu l'maseim haraim harbe min harishona v'nivlu k'mesim b'shol. There's a pasuk in Eov that's darshan, but then at the end of that 40 years, they really they were quite bad, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed them. The question is, what incident that what happened? It sounds like something happened 40 years after Yonah. So the Radal, one of the great Chachamim, says it can't be time-wise that was prophesied about in Sefer Nochum is this destruction, because it would have been much later. It was like 120 years after that. So there's a problem with the chronology. So what he says, and the Malbim says something similar, is there was a destruction of Nineveh another time. 40 years after Yonah, they were destroyed. In fact, where am I? The Malbim, I mentioned this to you in passing last time, the Malbim says how the Abarvanel is very insistent that we have to explain that they actually were destroyed. We have to show that that really did happen. The Malbim says, I don't know why you have to say that happened. That was a threat. They were supposed to do tshuva. They did tshuva and it didn't happen. But the Abarvanel says, no, it has to have come true in some way. And he makes all sorts of calculations. You'll recall he said, Od Arboim Yom is Od is Ayin and Vav is 76, which is good for the Philadelphians, yeah. Ayin Vav Dal is 80, and Arboim is 40, and Yom can mean years. Od and Arboim Yom, 80 and 40 years, Nineveh Nepach is 120 years later when the real destruction happened. But that's a little bit of a far-out homiletical interpretation. The Malbim says if we're going to be so insistent on the fact that it has to be that the destruction actually happened, he says there was a destruction of Nineveh that happened 40 years after Yonah. Actually, some from I quoted even from historical records. So something did happen 40 years later. It sounds like it's not the destruction prophesied about in Sefer Nochum, but there was a destruction that came about 40 years later. So according to Chazal, they didn't do such a full tshuva. They were destroyed. The truth is, it ends up being a machlokas in Chazal, and there's pieces here for us to try to...
Could you say it was complete at the time, but later on they fell again? I mean...
I guess so. Right. The truth is, that's the question they ask. If tshuva means that Hashem will testify, you'll never do it again.
We walk in on Yom Kippur and we've done tshuva, but right, somehow the next year we're back there again.
Right.
With similar sins or
different sins. It's a good point. Maybe whether they were destroyed later and whether they did tshuva shlema or not interconnected. I wrote a note in my shir to connect them, but maybe I'm wrong. That's my suggestion. It could be some do present it that way. How full was their tshuva, though, seems to be, interestingly enough, a machlokas between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. We have two Gemaras, the Babylonian Talmud and the Jerusalem Talmud. Our tradition is largely based on the Babylonian, the Talmud Bavli, and that's the one that we mostly study, because that's where more of the Chachamim were. It was worked on more, and therefore became the authoritative text. But there's a lot of fascinating teachings in the Yerushalmi. There are some halachas that we have that come right out of the Yerushalmi, not the Bavli. Occasionally there's like a mysterious ruling and nobody can figure out why did the Rambam say that, or why does it say that? And then somebody says, look, it's the Yerushalmi. So we do use the Jerusalem Talmud as well. Interestingly here, in the Bavli, in the Babylonian Talmud, it sounds like they did a very thorough tshuva. In the Yerushalmi, it says they did not. The Gemara in Maseches Tanis, said, we'll see soon, it says they did tshuva min hachomos asher b'chapeyim, from the theft or the extortion that was in their hand. They did tshuva from min hachomos asher b'chapeyim. So Omar Shmuel afilu gozal meirish ubeno babira mekakeya kol abira kula machzer meirish lebalov. What kind of a tshuva did they do? Even if he stole a beam and he built it into his mansion, but it's the other guy's beam, that's mine. So what would they do? Knock down the whole structure to return the beam. Such a self-sacrifice. But that's the nature of the tshuva they did. I mean, we want everything back. Anything I have that's not mine, I'm going to give it back at whatever cost. Whatever cost to myself. And what's amazing is that wording is exactly the wording in a different Gemara. The Gemara in Gittin is addressing what happens if somebody stole a beam. It uses the exact same words. Gozal meir shebeno babira. If he stole a beam and he built it into his castle, Beis Shammai says, well, knock down the whole thing and give it back. And Beis Hillel says, you don't have to. Takanas HaShovim. It's a famous thing called Takanas HaShovim, an institution for the penitent. We want to encourage tshuva. And if tshuva is so difficult, people won't do it. So even though really, you have to give the guy his beam back. You can't just pay him the $50 for the beam. You have to give him his thing. But the Beis Hillel made an institution, or held that there was an institution, that you don't have to, because then so I can't do tshuva. I'm sorry, I'm not undoing my whole life just to do tshuva, so the person won't do tshuva. So Beis Hillel says it's not necessary. So some of the Mefarshim say, from the fact that Chazal used the same phrase, which we rule like Beis Hillel, you don't even have to do that. You don't have to go that far. And yet they did, what do you see? They did an extreme tshuva. More of a tshuva than we would have to do. Rabbeinu Bachai writes, "Tshuvas anshei Nineveh ha'isalif nim mishuras hadin." They went way beyond the letter of the law. Letter of the law, it's already built in. You can be lenient, just pay him the money. They said, "We're going to get rid of everything." Rabbeinu Bachai Vital writes that way. So from the Bavli, it sounds like they went well beyond the Chassam Sofer and a drasha. Is a drasha about the story of Yonah. He says a nice var. He says, originally they didn't. When they started doing tshuva, it wasn't so thorough. But then they realized, and they were made to realize, that Odar Boim Yom V'Ninveh Ne'apachas, another 40 days, Ninveh will be overturned. So this is a classic teaching. I mentioned it's quoted in the Rashi, as we have it, although it's not really Rashi's writing. That you have a choice. Ninveh is either going to be overturned, physically, or Ninveh is going to turn itself around. Ne'apachas means turn around. So basically, you either have to do tshuva, that word has to be fulfilled. Nineveh is going to turn around. Either it's going to turn upside down on its head and everybody's going to be destroyed, or you're going to turn your behavior around. So, of course, tshuva would fulfill that. But then they were told, no, there has to be a tshuva that fulfills the other meaning also. So Nineveh is going to get overturned. But you can overturn yourself in tshuva, or you can perish. So they overturned themselves, and you can imagine people were knocking down their houses. They were digging things up. They were, we're going to do such a tshuva that the tshuva process is going to be an upheaval. It's going to be overturning, but that's better than being destroyed. So says the Chassam Sofer in a drasha. But it does seem from the Bavli that they did do a thorough tshuva. You were even giving back beams that were built into the houses, into the castles, which is a very thorough tshuva. In the Yerushalmi has a wording, tshuva sharamoyus. They did a tshuva of trickery. They did a tshuva just to look like it was tshuva. It was not a thorough tshuva. And what you have there is a teaching that says, they would give back whatever was in their hand. If I literally, I stole your thing, I have it in my hand, I'll give it back. But anything that was more involved than that, that wasn't on hand, so then they didn't do that. The Yerushalmi Maseches Tainus in the second chapter says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ma shehayeh b'chaf yadeihem hechziru. What was in their hand, they gave back. Ma shehayeh b'shita tevu migdalo hechziru. But if it was already, you know, it was in the chest in his house, it was in a drawer, if it literally happened in my hand, oh yeah, I'm supposed to do tshuva. Oh, that's awkward. Yes, I give it back. But they didn't do the full tshuva. So the Mabit, actually, in the chapter right before this, says a beautiful and encouraging thing. He says, although when it comes to other mitzvos, if you miss a key ingredient, it's valueless. He uses an example, if I have a mitzvah to put four tzitzis strands in the four corners of my garment, so I'm just going to do three. I'm not spiritually up to four yet, I want to do three. Well, that's not a mitzvah. I'm going to take a little bit of esrog, but I'm not into hadassim. You know, it doesn't work. There are many mitzvahs where if you don't have all the key ingredients, some things are not make, some things are just nice to do. But the things that are a key component of the mitzvah, if you don't have it, it's not the mitzvah. It's like leaving a key ingredient out of some food. You know, you don't have the chicken, even though you have the spices, there's no dinner. So Einu Makayim Gibel Chelke HaMitzvah Sherei Dalat Tzitzi Yos Ma'akvin Tzitzi. If I did 3 out of 4, it's nothing. It's not 75%. It's nothing. V'arehu Ki'ilu Lo Asa Shum Dover. It's like he did nothing. V'ulam HaTshuva V'tshuva Gam Ki Einu Shleima Ad Shetiyah B'charot L'Sha'avar V'azivas HaChet L'Asid. But tshuva, even it doesn't have all the ingredients. And this is a chiddush, because in some sfarim it looks like tshuva, the bare minimum, has to have 3 ingredients. You regret the past, you commit for the future, and you confess. That's the
but you have to really feel it. That's the whole problem.
Right.
It's true, but you have to, like, in other words, you could say, okay, I forgive you, and I'll give this back, and I'll do everything. But if you don't really feel it inside...
Yeah, charata is a very big avodah. To really regret, I wish I hadn't done that, that's a strong feeling. And also commitment for the future, and not just, I should try to do better, but... from now on, I'm a different person. Yeah, it's a very... The vidu is the easiest part. But yeah, a real tshuva is very difficult. But he says that any part of tshuva has some merit. Im kol zeh acharat levad b'li azivas achet moel k'tzas. Just regret. And some people, they really feel bad, but they don't have the oomph. They don't have the strength of character to change. I feel so bad about my sins, and I'm going to do them tomorrow also. But it's so bad, it's terrible. But there's no strength of character to change. Still works. V'chein azivas achet b'li charata. Sometimes you have the opposite. A person who says, I'm going to be different henceforth. I'm glad I got those years in of doing X, Y, and Z, but I'm going to, there isn't a charata. So that's also not a real tshuva.
This is the Mabit?
Huh?
This is the Mabit, you're saying?
Yes, this is the Mabit.
And
the Mabit has a lot of classic ideas. And you have to realize this is not a contemporary sefer. This is an old and classic sefer. A lot of fundamentals.
Amazing.
I mean, we have a teaching in the Gemara about Herhuri tshuva, that even if you just have... mental static of tshuva is also worth something. We have a lot of sources that indicate there's something to even the very beginning vestiges of tshuva. And he gives some examples, talking about Achav. And then he says, V'chein matzina ba'anshei Nineveh. So do we find by Nineveh, she'shavu la'asid, she'azvu hached, v'lo nischartu ala avar. They didn't regret the past. They just said, we'll change. He said, every person should change his ways and the chamas in their hands. Gezel hanecha means theft that's been eaten up. I stole, but now the money's not liquid anymore. I already spent it at the bar. I don't have it anymore. So that they didn't bother doing tshuva. If I literally just stole something and I have it. I have the $20 in my pocket that I just pickpocketed from Yenim. So that they would give back. So that's chamas shir b'chapeim. Only what's right in hand. So it's fascinating. With the Bavli darshans as a compliment and as a profound tshuva, whatever theft was in their hand could mean in the wall of the house too. The Yerushalmi says, no, I mean, he's going with the Yerushalmi. And he quotes it here. It says, Rabbi Yochanan says in Yerushalmi, Masha hayeh b'kafi deim yachziru b'shidat hayeh b'migdal lo yachziru. And he says, and that's why the pasuk is going to say, Hashem saw kishavu midarkam hara'a. They returned from their bad ways. It doesn't say that they felt bad. It just says that they changed their ways, which means going forward. Azibus hached la'asid levad. Only that. V'im kol zeh ho'el lahem. It still worked. Shenicham elokim ala ra'a shadir la'asid v'lo'a. So Hashem changed his mind, kibayachal, from the bad that he had said would happen, and he didn't do it. So we'll have to come to it next time. That's what troubled Yonah. According to many Mefarshim, he says, oh, Hashem, I didn't know you were going to be so lenient. Oh, no. Like, he was hoping at least they'd struggle with it and not do tshuva, and at least if they wouldn't do a full tshuva, that Hashem wouldn't forgive them. And then he sees that they do a very minimal tshuva, again, going with the approach of the Yerushalmi, which a lot of Mefarshim seem to prefer. So then he gets upset, because that's one of the questions we're going to have to address. And next time, maybe, why does Yonah get so upset? You read the story, it's like a non sequitur. He tries to run away from the shlichus of Hashem. Hashem teaches him a lesson, you got to do what I say. He goes and he does it, and then he gets upset. So what happened? So what we're seeing here is that Hashem sort of comforted him and either made him think, or he on his own thought, that they're not going to do a full tshuva, and if they don't do a full tshuva, they won't be forgiven. And Hashem shows him that, no, even partial tshuva merits salvation. And again, from the fact that years later they do perish, might be an indication that the tshuva wasn't wholehearted, and there still were aspects of chait that were lingering and came to the surface later. But one of the great lessons here is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Rachaman, he has great mercy, and he forgives human beings when they show willingness to do tshuva, even if that tshuva is not as complete as it should be. Okay.